We let it get a little closer to Easter. And today's message will actually be the 21st message of part 2 of this series in the Gospel of Mark, which means it's actually the 45th message since this whole series began. So we've been in this book for quite a while. But Mark's Gospel has led us through a lot of different themes and topics along the way. And now we're nearing the climax here. The book of Mark is really all about the journey of Jesus to the cross, and now it really narrows down to where it's all been heading. So we come to Mark chapter 15, and it's the beginning of the day that we call Good Friday. So if you want to turn with me there to Mark 15 and verses 1 to 15. This, of course, is after Jesus was betrayed by Judas and arrested by the armed men there in Gethsemane, and he went through then an entire night of interrogations, of beatings, and also being disowned by Peter. And now it says in verse 1, "Very early in the morning, the chief priests with the elders, the teachers of the law, and the whole Sanhedrin reached a decision. They bound Jesus and led him away and handed him over to Pilate. 'Are you the king of the Jews?' asked Pilate. 'Yes, it is as you say,' Jesus replied. Chief priests accused him of many things, and so again, Pilate asked him, 'Aren't you going to answer? See how many things they are accusing you of?' But Jesus still made no reply, and Pilate was amazed. Now, it was the custom at the feast to release a prisoner whom the people requested. A man called Barabbas was in prison with the insurrectionists who had committed murder in the uprising. And the crowd came up and asked Pilate to do for them what he usually did. 'Do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?' asked Pilate, knowing it was out of envy that the chief priests had handed Jesus over to him. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to have Pilate release Barabbas instead. 'What shall I do then with the one you call the king of the Jews?' Pilate asked them. 'Crucify him,' they shouted. 'Why, what crime has he committed?' asked Pilate. But they shouted all the louder, 'Crucify him.' And wanting to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas to them. He had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified." You know, the cross has become the most recognized symbol in the world. We see it on everything from graves to steeples to flags to tattoos and jewelry. The cross has become such a common sight that we actually forget what a strange symbol it is. It actually started out as a political symbol long before it ever became a religious symbol. The cross was the ultimate symbol of the Roman Empire in Jesus' time. It was the Romans' way of saying, "We're in charge here, and this is what happens to people who get in our way." It was the most humiliating, horrific, painful means of execution available to Rome. It struck horror into the lives of Rome's enemies and their subjects. So imagine choosing a vicious tool of execution as an icon or as a piece of jewelry. It's like having a guillotine or a hangman's noose, you know, hanging on your wall or dangling from your necklace. Or like putting an electric chair up on the platform in the church. Now, that would never have happened except that the cross was changed. It was transformed from a symbol of human power to terrorize and kill into a symbol of divine power to love and forgive. It happened on that first Good Friday when the cross was changed from an expression of the ultimate threat to an expression of the ultimate hope. And so the cross came to mean the exact opposite of its original purpose. So how did this happen? Well, it's all because Jesus chose the cross. He chose it. He chose to die on it. And after that Good Friday, when he died on the cross, that cross would never be the same, and neither would the world. And so here in Mark 15, we see that while evil men were busy scheming and playing politics and using the cross to get their way, Jesus would use the cross in his way to save the world. Well, it really all began after Jesus had raised Lazarus from the dead. If you remember in John chapter 11 there, it tells us that when he did that, it says many put their faith in Jesus. It also tells us at that time that many of the chief priests and Pharisees became very afraid of Jesus. So why were they afraid? Because it says that they said, if we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and then the Romans will come and take away our place and our nation. They had a great fear that if someone rose up and gained a following, that the Romans would eliminate their positions. And so there was no love lost between the Romans and the Jewish leaders. Rome did allow the chief priests certain authority and privileges, but if there was anything like a popular uprising, rallying of people behind some radical Jewish upstart, anything like that, the Romans would immediately move in, squash the movement, and crucify its leaders. And this had happened at least 18 times that we know of before Jesus even came along. Again and again, this had happened. And so they were afraid. They also knew that it could possibly mean that the chief priests would be held responsible. So these Jewish leaders were pretty desperate to put an end to Jesus. And so they did succeed in arresting him, but even after they'd managed to just secretly arrest Jesus there in Gethsemane, and you know, they still had a really difficult and delicate task ahead of them. For one thing, Rome didn't allow the Jews the power to inflict capital punishment. They couldn't kill Jesus. And the religious leaders' charge against Jesus for arresting him was for speaking blasphemy. But that would mean nothing to Rome. Rome wouldn't execute him for that. So they had to find a way to both turn the crowds away against Jesus and also at the same time convince the Roman governor, Pontius Pilate, that Jesus was indeed a threat to Rome and to Caesar. How are they going to do that? If the priests told the crowds that Jesus was a threat to the Romans, well, that would backfire. The crowds would rally to Jesus then and make matters only worse for them. So they actually had to lay two charges against him. A charge of blasphemy, so the crowds would turn against him, and a charge of treason, so Pilate would have to crucify him. So it was a really tricky and very malicious business here. So it says the first thing in the morning, the chief priests, the religious leaders, bind Jesus and they lead him to Pilate. Now Pilate has a difficult job. I mean, he was an upper class Roman who would far rather have been serving Rome back home in Rome than being stuck there in the Middle East. It's the last place most of them wanted to be. But Tiberius Caesar had appointed him to be the procurator of Judea, and so he was there. And it meant that he had full powers of life and death in his province. He could execute anyone, he could pardon anyone. It all came down to him. But his main task, Pilate's main task, was to do whatever was necessary to maintain the peace. Okay? Rome was very proud of the Pax Romana, the peace that they felt they were bringing to the world. And Caesar did not want to hear of any disturbances in his empire. We know this is one of the most troubled parts of his empire. And so Pilate was one who was both ruthless and quite often overzealous in carrying out his duties. He had once antagonized the Jews by setting up the Roman standards with Caesar's image right there in the middle of Jerusalem. That didn't go down too well. He had to remove them eventually. Another time he stole money from the temple treasury to fund one of his building projects. That was a problem. And as we read in Luke 13, verse 1, that's when some of the Galileans revolted. And he actually, at that time, had his soldiers ambush them as they worshiped at the temple. It says in Luke 13 that he mixed their blood with the blood of their sacrifices. The ancient historians have nothing good to say about Pilate. He was ruthless. But now the ball is in Pilate's court. Luke's gospel tells us that they brought Jesus to Pilate saying he was subverting their nation, that he was claiming to be Messiah, a king. And that was a trigger word, king. And this was a charge that Pilate had to pay attention to. He had to notice this. And so the very first question he asked Jesus is, are you the king of the Jews? As far as Rome was concerned, there was only one king of the Jews, and that was Tiberius Caesar. Any other king was a threat and would be someone who would need to be eliminated. But Jesus answers his question, are you the king of the Jews, basically by just saying, you have said so. Or literally, the words are yours. And through that and other things that Pilate observes here, I think he knew that Jesus really was no threat to Caesar. Didn't even appear to have any followers, never mind leading a band of rebels. In John's gospel, Jesus tells Pilate at this point that he's not that kind of king. His kingdom is from another place, he says. We know it's the kingdom of God. When the chief priest then continued to accuse Jesus of many things, Jesus says nothing. He says nothing in response. And it says, Pilate was amazed. To fail to defend yourself was actually to concede your case to the accusers. And Pilate didn't really want that because he didn't like these guys, the chief priests. He didn't want to do anything to please them. But Jesus didn't offer him any reasons or excuses for Pilate to set him free. And that's because he had already chosen to go to the cross. He'd fully surrendered to it back there in Gethsemane. Now it was just a matter of letting things take their course. And Jesus wasn't going to stop that. But it's clear here, Pilate didn't want to condemn Jesus. Both Luke and John's Gospels, he says to the crowd, I find no basis for a charge against this man. And then he tries three different ways to get out of condemning him. First of all, according to Luke's gospel, when Pilate hears that Jesus is from Galilee, he tries to pass the buck by sending Jesus over to Herod Antipas, who was the governor of Galilee, who happened to be in Jerusalem for Passover. So Jesus goes over to Herod, the same thing. He wouldn't answer Herod's questions. So Herod just sends him back to Pilate again. And then Pilate gets another idea. There was a custom at Passover that the Roman governor would release to the people one prisoner by popular request. And at that time, there was this well-known prisoner being held and also awaiting crucifixion. And his name was Barabbas. Mark says he was an insurrectionist who committed murder at the uprising. He was one of these terrorists. Barabbas was actually guilty of the very crime for which Jesus was being accused, rebellion against Rome. And so Pilate decides to give the crowd the choice here between releasing the harmless Jesus or releasing this dangerous murderer. Pilate believed that they would ask for Jesus. I mean, after all, he was popular with the people. Many had welcomed him into Jerusalem there with hosannas just a week before. So why did the people choose to release Barabbas instead of Jesus? Well, first of all, verse 11, it says that the chief priests stirred up the crowd, persuading them to ask for Barabbas, not Jesus. And secondly, by this point, the people may have become disappointed with Jesus because he had not defied the Romans. He had turned out to be a different kind of Messiah than they were expecting. He wasn't standing up to them. He wasn't leading the revolution. Not as they imagined it would be. But Barabbas, well, even though he was a bloodthirsty murderer, well, he was kind of a local hero. He was a freedom fighter. And so these were part of the reason why they preferred Barabbas to be released. But there was a deeper and a more mysterious reason here, a God reason. Matthew's gospel tells us that Barabbas was also known as Jesus. It's his name. Matthew 27:17 says, Pilate said to the crowd, "Which one do you want me to release to you, Jesus Barabbas or Jesus who is called Messiah?" The murderer's name was Jesus Barabbas. Do you know what Barabbas means? Barabbas. It means son of the Father. It's interesting. There's more here than meets the eye. And God is mysteriously at work here behind the scenes. So the crowd is now confronted with choosing between either Jesus, son of the Father, who rules by force and selfish ambition and action, or Jesus, son of the Father, who rules by love and self-sacrifice. Which Jesus will it be? And this is the choice they have before them. One man will go free, and one man will have to die on the cross. Well, this scene here in Jerusalem invites us to see the crucifixion in terms of a personal exchange. Barabbas deserves to die. Jesus dies instead, and Barabbas goes free. The guilty one is set free because the innocent one dies. Do you see it? It's a picture of how Jesus' death takes the place, not just of one condemned man, but of all who stand condemned before God's perfect standard of justice. You and me. One died that all may go free. You know, you and I also actually face the same decision that these Jews had to make here between Barabbas and Jesus. Maybe you've been disappointed by Jesus. Maybe you expected him to do something he hasn't done. Maybe you've even been angry because he didn't seem to live up to his promise the way you thought he would. And like this crowd here in Jerusalem, you get impatient, maybe you get angry with God, maybe you start to doubt Jesus, and you start to look at other options. And you know what? There's always another Jesus waiting in the wings, right? Lots of promising alternatives, lots of different ways. Lots of false messiahs who promise to get us what we want. But this story tells us that God's ways are mysterious here. There's more here than we can really figure out. It's more about him than we can figure out. God is true to himself, and he will never deceive us. And so the question that Pilate now asks the crowd next in verse 12 is a question that we all need to ask ourselves. He says to them, "What shall I do then with the one you call the King of the Jews?" And you can ask yourself, what will I do with Jesus? What will you do with Jesus? It's an important question. Maybe the most important question you could ever ask. What will you do with Jesus? You know, life confronts us every day with decisions to choose either Christ or Barabbas, to choose truth or error, to choose honesty or deceit, to choose man's ways or God's ways. And that's why the greatest question of all time is, what will you do with Jesus, who is called the Christ? Well, the crowds that day made their decision. "Crucify him," they shouted. "Why, what crime has he committed?" asked Pilate. And they shouted all the louder, "Crucify him." Well, Pilate tries one more tactic here to avoid condemning Jesus. Mark's gospel doesn't elaborate on it, but John's does. John's gospel says in chapter 19, or tells us there, that it was at this point that Pilate had Jesus flogged. He had him beaten. He had a Roman soldier take him and, using a whip plated with pieces of bone and lead, lashed him who knows how many times. It would have torn Jesus' skin to shreds. It was a terrible beating. And then he brought the wounded and bleeding Jesus out again to the people, to the crowd there, and he said to them, "Here is the man. Behold the man." You see, Pilate's last hope was that a beaten and bloodied Jesus would change the hearts of the people. He hoped it would arouse some sympathy and get him off the hook. But again, he was wrong. John says, as soon as they saw Jesus again, they shouted, "Crucify, crucify." And even at that point, Pilate still had power to release Jesus, but he feared the crowd, and he caved in to their demands. Matthew's gospel says that at that point, Pilate took water and he washed his hands in front of them, claiming his innocence. And then he released Barabbas and had Jesus handed over to be crucified. So why did Jesus go to the cross? Why did he choose the cross? Well, he went to the cross for love. That's what it was. And it was his choice. It wasn't Pilate's choice or Caesar's. It wasn't the chief priests or the crowds. It was his choice alone. If you remember, he said to the disciples earlier on, "I lay down my life for the sheep. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord." He said, "I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again." Jesus was the one who was making this decision, really. He's doing it for us. And so he willingly died on the cross to save a sinner like Barabbas. He died there to save the crowds of people who were disappointed in him, who didn't understand him, and even calling for his death. And he died for you and me. And that's when we learn, when we read the story of Jesus, we learn to see it as the story of God's love. It's pure love, doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. So what will you do with Jesus? The cross, and what a strange symbol it is. But Jesus knew that through love, the cross would become a symbol, not just of sin and death, but also a symbol of redemptive love and forgiveness. Praise be to God. Amen.